G'day folks, talk to Indy Gregg, a social tech entrepreneur and the CEO and founder of WeDo. Her digital disruption has been noticed by CNN and Forbes, just to name a few. And her journey started out in nurturing other young tech entrepreneurs with their startups in the digital space. And she's also an accomplished musician. She's been signed to some big labels in the past. And if you like the podcast, hit that subscribe or follow button. And we've also got a Patreon page. The link is within the description. So if you want to roll with the squad and become a patron, that'd be great. And want to thank our sponsors, Permobil Australia, the greatest electric wheelchairs in the land. Wouldn't be sitting in anything else but these four wheels right here. And they've got great assistive tech also. So righto, let's get into it.
Keep rolling with Jake Briggs.
Indiana Gregg. Indy Gregg, thanks for jumping on the Keep Rolling podcast and sitting down and getting willing and ready to have a chat with me.
Thanks for having me.
So before we jump into WeDo, and I was just going to say I love your backdrop there. Looks awesome.
Our little green man.
Yeah, that's a company mascot,
the logo,
yeah?
Yeah, he's called Wes. He represents equality, the three sides to a company. So, the three sides to just about any organization. So you have the investors, the public, and the company itself, and how that works is an egalitarian type of business or organization. Just as a reminder to treat people with respect and equality. Oh yeah.
I love that. You know, covering all facets there, especially when it's got to do with inclusion, equality, accessibility, all about it. So before we jump into WeDo and what that represents, so yourself, like growing up, and yeah, just take us back to like whereabouts in the planet on the globe are you, and who is Indy Gregg, and did you always have an interest in tech growing up, and then we'll sort of just roll along those lines?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I was born in the 70s, so back when there were these massive mainframe computers that had punch cards, some of the first personal computers came out around when I was around the age of 8 or 9, and one of my friends had one. And you could program it, DOS. And so that was kind of my first interest is, oh, I can make pictures in DOS. They look terrible. You know, it's like all these lines and things on a black screen. But it was fun. And that was probably my first introduction. I was also really interested in music. I had a speech impediment. And my teacher who coached me through that got me really involved in music. So there was this kind of combination of the interests between stuff like MIDI and synths that were first coming out and computers. And I was pretty sure that's the route I would take in my life. And then I went to university and studied computer science. So I was a Midwestern kid. We were a pretty modest family, didn't have much money, had a lot of love, a lot of creativity. After I left,
like as in Midwestern, like Midwestern USA,
I was born in a town called Terre Haute. Not a lot to do there, lots of cornfields. So creativity was kind of a way to entertain yourself as well, you know, learning new things. I moved to Europe, 19. And I was working with Sony Digital. I ended up having 3 kids, and my ex left the family. So I randomly decided, hey, I'll just become a rock star. And so I got a record deal and went on tour as a single mom, basically, with my kids. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was kind of
cool. And traveling around with them, yeah?
Yeah, I traveled around with them. My parents also flew over from America. We had one tour that was like a month long in the UK. that my parents came and looked after the kids and I could get back and forth because, you know, UK is not that big to get back and forth, you know. So I did that. And at the time, there was a problem with piracy in the market. Big sites like the Pirate Bay and other big aggregators of file sharing peer-to-peer were kind of, you know, taking a dent on the independent artists and on the artists in general. There's this big feud.
Like Napster and along the lines of that, yeah.
Yeah. So because I had a technology background and I had this idea of what the future of music should be like, I created a platform and it was called Kertunes, and we aggregated a bunch of artists, labels, and publishers on it. And it went really well until the recession hit because we had an advertising model. And the advertising model just went kaput during the recession, of course. I think we all remember the 2007, 2008, 2009 frame. And so kept it going for a while, had about 14.5 million users. But, you know, other applications.
That's a good number.
Sorry?
That's a good number.
Yeah, we had quite a lot of traction. It was pretty happening. A lot of major artists too, who had been on labels and moved to other labels and who moved their own labels on. It was a pretty exciting time. And then later on, I started a beauty company during the recession, mainly because I thought, well, this is bread and butter, not totally dependent on advertising revenue. And that we ended up selling millions of units. It was called Groove Nail Care. And that was kind of the way we forged through the recession. And then I became an independent consultant. So I started working with startups on their digital delivery systems and on, design and UX and a lot of just wherever I would fill in. So I did, you know, I was a marketing chief for one company and I was operations chief for another and did kind of this fragmented work life as a freelancer. And the idea.
And what drew you into the space? Sorry? Like when you're looking at when you're looking at getting drawn into that space, like what was, like, was it individual figures that you might have looked at that were in that space that, like, if it's people that are running tech giant companies or if it had to do with music or a combination of both, or like what was really keeping you on that track to when you're looking at tech and you're like, yeah, I want to be drawn in this space and I'm looking to these people that are really showing influence?
Yeah, I think it's the people and also the vision that they have for the company, like kind of impact it will have on society. That's really important to me. People first, always. Their talent, knowledge, skills, but mostly their enthusiasm and drive and infectiousness, really, to drag people like myself or other professionals into their team and for us to get involved. They need to have a good, strong ethics system. That's very important for me. And just know their shit, you know, mainly. So,
100%.
Yeah. So, that was really fun, really exciting. Got to help a lot of startups, mentored some founders and worked in really just helping wherever I could in companies that needed my skill set. And then, because I was in that freelance market, I was paying attention to where things were going. And I realized that this was really growing globally. More and more freelancers, more and more side hustles, more and more fractional, more and more remote work. And this was prior to.
Was a lot of that through. Was that a lot of that through Digital Unicorn that you're running in Delaware?
I did it all through Digital Unicorn, primarily because that was an easy way to attract people. And we had a really outstanding team of individuals who would go in and work and do things. So it was like an agency that outsourced the guy you need, the girl you needed for, you know, the gap in your skill set for your startup. And we weren't too expensive. So it was a good match for a lot of startups at the time.
And you pumped out some unicorns.
Well, we've worked with some unicorns, yeah, some multi-billion-dollar companies as well as startups. But yeah, none of them have become a unicorn yet that I know of. I think one of them's around $500,000. That we started. So yeah, so then now we're with Edu, and the point of that is, you know, it's going to be a major shift in the markets. The solopreneur, the entrepreneur, they're many, and it's nearly half the global workforce. So that's why I started Edu.
That's awesome. And like looking at digital unicorn, right? And then you're looking at, you know, where as a startup incubator, what you're doing there. And that's great stuff, because you'd be having like other individuals and their skill sets coming through, and being able to harness that for individuals and build community, but good for your knowledge and your skill set too. Hey, so, but also, what's the benefit of, I don't know a whole bunch of it, but you'd be able to probably jump into it a little bit more. Like when it's got to do with companies and tech firms, like if it's coming in and around Delaware, like what are the benefits there in that state in the US?
Well, in Delaware, you don't have state tax. Your company remains relatively private. It's easier to set up your shareholding, your share capital there. Primarily the difference is tax, is why a lot of startups will start up in Delaware. Yeah, so we, for example, our Delaware has 100 million shares. It's cheap, easy. You can set up a Delaware in a day. And so I think that's one of the main advantages is the state tax. I think there are a couple other states. I think Wyoming's kind of interesting, and so is Nevada in terms of state tax on business. File your annual returns.
Nevada, that makes sense, eh? There's, oh man, the amount of money going through that state, it'd be ridiculous.
Nevada's an interesting one because I think there's 100, I may be wrong, but I think there's about 1.5 million people in Las Vegas. And in the whole of the Nevada, there's like 2 million. I mean, it's like, there's not many more. But the strange thing is like 3 million people come through Las Vegas a month or some, I'm pretty sure it's like 3 million. Well, it's either 1.5 million or 3 million, which make a total of 3 million, actually. That's what it is. So just as many people who live in Las Vegas are visited by people. Like, I think the ratio is 1-to-1 or 1-to-1.5 or something. Crazy.
Just some jeez, that's
random
wild
trivia there.
Yeah.
May or may not be accurate.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I read about that about a week ago, so thought that was funny.
Yeah. And we'll just see how all that pans out, too. And because, you know, I don't know what it, I'm obviously not from over in the States, but, and, but you'd still have a fair bit of family in that back over home too, would you?
Yeah, I have some family over. I have 3 brothers and my parents are still living. They live in Florida. So, yeah, I go back every once in a while. I live in Europe. So.
Yep. I've heard Florida's a pretty interesting state, hey, so.
Yeah.
But so how's it go in, like, culturally, like when you're looking at where you're from over in the States and now you've made this shift over to the, you're in the United Kingdom, yeah?
Yeah. Our business
and what's,
is based in London.
Based in London. So what's it like there when you're looking at, because you see all this stuff coming out of Silicon Valley, right? But what is tech in and around in Europe, and if you're looking at London, so is that like a bit of a hub within its own right?
Yeah, for financial technology, certainly. I mean, London's pretty advanced in terms of fintech. companies that have come out globally in the last decade. And to me, given technology, and especially given COVID, it doesn't really matter where you put your home for your company. For example, our workforce, like all of our workers on our teams here at WeDo, work all over the world. So we have a few in the West Coast of America. We have a few on the East Coast. We have a few in Germany, a few in Spain, a few in, you know, the UK, and a few in India. So I think it doesn't necessarily matter. What matters most is how you run your operations and the type of people you bring on board, you know, how autonomous they are and how much value they bring to their team, no matter where they're working. We have a very flexible work relationship where, you know, some people will take a Friday off, but they work really hard through the week, or some people will say, hey, I've got an appointment on Tuesday, I'm going to work from 5 till midnight instead. And as long as they're getting their goals met and they're reaching their KPIs, and then we're good. So, and I think a lot of tech teams are being run that way right now, not just as a result of COVID. It was already a trend prior to COVID, but it's more prevalent now than ever before.
That's awesome, you know. Well, that's it. As long as they're meeting their KPIs and, you know, they're meeting those targets and work's getting done, then it's great, like, having that flexibility. And yeah, like, when you're looking at flexibility within community, because you were talking about, you know, US, Europe, Asia, like India, that's awesome. So, but that's just going to get more reach out, you know, for individuals and community to use your platform and to flourish within that. So looking at the slogan, building the future of work, what does that mean to you, and essentially what does it represent?
Well, I think that we're moving into, first of all, a very knowledge-based society. It won't be long before robotics will take over all the grunt work that humans were doing. I think Elon Musk announced that not too long ago. And we know there's going to be that transition, right? What it means is humans are going to be more and more liberated and to actually do things they love and fulfill their own purpose or the missions or the things that they want to create value in the world. We're so tied to work as individuals, as part of our sense of purpose. Work in terms of if you're a mother, if you're a family member, everything we do essentially that's outside of our thought processes is translated into some form of work or energy, you know, in the world. So when I talk about work, I'm talking about how we spend our time and create value in our lives and other people's lives across the globe. And for me, it's essential that create those spaces where there's freedom and flexibility, but also that we use technology to remove barriers for people so that they can do work any place, anywhere, anytime, you know, how they want. And for me, that's what's essential. So WeDo is an application seriously built just to remove those barriers of entry and make it very easy for people to access video and audio calls, run teams and groups, broadcast to up to a million people, take instant and seamless payments all in one go, sell tickets, and, you know, send and receive invoices. And what's underneath all of that with WeDo is a banking services thing. So we issue people a MasterCard debit card, and they have an account, and they can exchange in any currency they want. And we'll be also,
that's awesome.
Yeah, accepting cryptos. So that's how it works.
Crypto too. Yeah, because that's what I want to bring up. I'll bring this up on the screen. And if you don't mind just explaining this to for the listeners and also the viewers, so I'll just bring this up. Boom. There we go. So this is on the main page. A Weedoo. Time-saving tools at your fingertips. So if you don't mind just going through, because I'm really intrigued in this, like how it all interrelates and just its functionality of the platform, but its purpose. So, and when you're looking at, okay, let's go through these six steps that we're looking at. So you got create, then you got share, then you got relate, then you got save, then you got sell and succeed. So if we can start with create and go from the top down and just hit on these factors and yeah, and just look at its functionality and purpose.
Yeah, so you can create, basically we have a video and audio area called Allies, and you can create a room there and collaborate with people on a stage together and then, you know, or create and broadcast an audience and then record that. So let's say you and I were doing a podcast and you were recording that, you could sell seats to your podcast in the audience. And, you know, kind of like what people call a webinar, except it's really a podcast, right? So you could do that for artists or for musicians or for entertainers or for companies who want to, you know, engage with their employees or their clients and take real-time payments. So another example of create would be, say I'm building a website for you and you come on and you're my client and you say, look, I really want you to start this build. And I have terms of maybe 25% down. I can say, okay, I'm sending you the contract over right now that I know you've read on the last call when we were first talking. And you're like, yeah, everything's fine. And I can just send you a button push and you're able to pay me that first 25%. And I get started on your project. In the meanwhile, when I have questions with you, I can come and we can meet face to face through the application so that we can keep tabs on things and I can keep you updated. And we also have a chat that stays there forever. So it's unlike some of the other video applications where you have a chat with all these people and then it all disappears afterwards or they send you some sort of you know, spreadsheet of it, like your email, which you're never going to look at probably. But you know what I mean? So you have a constant flow with that particular person. Which is nice. And of course, all of that centered around the services of banking services where, you know, you can, when you make your money, you can instantly deploy it or send it to another bank or make your payments or set up your direct debit. So tying it all really like a social network into a space where you can really run a business is what goal was and is.
So you can set up like a bit of a work flow within that too, in a way, or
absolutely, so you're exchanging files, you can bring in other people if you need them, and then you know they can exit when they need them and they only have the part of the chat or the conversations that they were involved in. It's just really a full-on collaboration tool that we believe people get extraordinarily creative with.
That's awesome. And can you, like, the person that initiates it, like, because I'm looking at create and then you're looking at share. So, and then you're looking at relate, right? So that's on the left-hand side of what I'm talking about here on the screen. So the person that initiates that, the client, and if they're reaching out to the different consultants, but if they're like, say, an admin in a way, can they, and there might be that, the workflows and all the job description itself, can they decide to, if something is working out or not working out, or if they want to sort of pull that person out of the loop, can they sort of drive the traffic there a little bit in a way?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you can pull them aside, you can bring other groups in, and yeah, you could drive traffic to, your live event that you're having on the app or whatever that is, pull people in, tweet it, you know, use social media to bring in people if it's something that you wanted to create an audience around. So, yeah.
Oh, so you could also throw out a tag, say, through, if it's depending on your style of work, but if you're looking at LinkedIn and what that possesses, so if you wanted to reach out to someone through your app, through to LinkedIn, and that could draw them in, yeah?
Yeah, you could do that too. Absolutely.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay. So we'll go on to the other side. So where we've got save, sell, and succeed. Succeed. Righto. So save time and money. So how does this platform, how is it saving time and money when you're looking at the general workflow of whatever it may be in day to day for individuals out there?
Yeah, so first of all, most applications are pay to play, so they're SaaS, you know, software as a service applications that a lot of businesses and freelancers use, and even people, for example, Zoom or Riverside FM or any of the platforms that are video platforms generally have come at a cost and a monthly cost, and so do a lot of the calendar applications like Calendly. An example, or HubSpot. So we've integrated a calendar that manages your time and your tasks for you, and that lets you know when you're got another appointment, or maybe when you're on due to show the world your gifts or do your client interactions or whatever you're doing. And so that's all fully integrated. It's also integrated with the banking part. So once you're paid, you get a list in your statement and your bank statement that expands of all the people who were in that particular meeting, who paid for that meeting, conference, ticket sale, whatever that is. And so it's all fully integrated and it saves you time. It also kicks out invoices so you don't have to. A lot of people spend two to three days a month just on invoicing businesses.
That's gold, because when it comes to admin, you know, some people just irk at the thought of that, you know, but especially if you've got like a fairly decent amount of invoices that need to be plugged out, and then it's if it's doing individual ones. But if this sort of spits it out, and can you customize them? So yes. Then obviously it's got your logo,
it's
or whatever
got your
it may
logo
be.
On it. It's a standard invoice. You can even change the color, the everything on it. And add your logo and add all your details, and it kicks it out. And then there's a pay button that they get by email, and they can come straight through and you're paid, and you don't have to think about it. You can actually set that up to automate. So if you have recurring invoices or subscriptions, and it's the same with the contracting side, you can actually set up the terms of most of your contracts and send that to your client through the app, and they can sign it, return it to you. Pay the first, you know, invoice on the terms, and it's all there for you, done for you. And you can just modify it with your terms and conditions as they apply to your business. So, yeah. And so having all of that in one place saves time, makes life easier. I don't know how many times, you know, you log into one of the banking apps or you log into one of another app that you need that you don't use every week, sometimes once a month or every couple months. Every couple weeks, and you know, they're asking, it's an authorization code, then you need to get an email verification, and then you need to do this and you do that, and if you do that for every app, sometimes it can spend, you know, an hour of your time just trying
to get
one
process. It does take a while, yeah.
Together. Yeah. So those are some of the pain points that especially freelancers go through, because a lot of freelancers don't have admin. If you're a solopreneur, you may not have someone, an assistant, like say, okay, can
that
you do my
true.
Invoicing for me or whatever? And a lot of them, you know, can't afford that, because if you're starting out as a freelancer, just got to, you know, you're just trying to get your first clients, get rolling. And I think that that's a shame, because technology can take care of that.
So taking care of that, righto, we're getting down to boom, down the bottom right, succeed. So talk us through that last section there of what that looks like, you know, or what it looks like for the individuals, like for the consultants, clients, but also what succeed means to we do. Because obviously there's something, wait up, I'll bring my mug back. There we go. Okay. So what does succeed also look for you guys? Because obviously you're running a pretty extensive application and, you know, you're going to need dollars for the back end to supply for the individuals that you got out there that are running this business and servers and this and hosting all that back end stuff. So talk to us about succeed from the people that are using the application to yourself and we do.
Yeah, for people who use the application, the idea is that they won't have the barriers that they have with many other lead gen sites, or for example, sites like your Fiverrs or your Upworks or your Freelancers, or there's millions of them. You take very big chunks of payments from the freelancer. So some of the models are the first $500 you make, they take 20%. And the first $10,000 you make, they take 10%. And by the time a freelancer or a consultant gets to the end of the year, a massive amount of their income has been just taken away by the platforms they use. And so in terms of WeDo, we believe in that triangle, the win situation where, you know, there is a way for everyone to be able to win. And on our end, we're interested in removing the barrier so it's free. But we take a small percentage on the back end because we're a banking services company. So on the interchange and on transactions, which everyone pays anyway. It's just that the banks haven't really delivered a lot of value. They compete with each other, but there's not a huge difference between each bank, right? And so if a bank really wants to create a great business relationship with their customers nowadays, they really need to be thinking about technologies that they can help their clients with. And from my point of view, WeDo is here to disrupt that space a little bit and say, hey, you can actually create an entire ecosystem that could help millions and millions of people and not make it like a middleman scenario. You're taking on some heavy hitters, you know?
Yeah, okay. Because you're taking on some heavy hitters when you're looking at Fiverr, Upwork, and there's a whole host of
other, but their whole model's built on huge commissions. And that's
massive.
Not fair.
Yeah, so certainly getting in there and disrupting, but it's good too. And like going back to your mascot in the background there, just where it's looking at trying to be inclusive for all, where, you know, everybody gets to have a bit of a drink at the well, you know, so, which is great. And so what kind of, there's so much going on here. Like when you're looking at the different facets of what you're doing and how you're running this. So how long did it take? Like, cause you've got years of culmination of thoughts and processes and just your knowledge and lived experience and trials and tribulations, but how long did it take to sort of put all this together and give it birth, you know?
Well, you know, it's taken a couple of years. I started iterating on ideas about it in October 2019, and that's when I started the business. But I didn't really fully get started until around March of 2020. During the first quarter of 2020, I was pretty much in my, I call it my hobbit hole. It's in my office, and iterating on the ideas and trying to work out how would these pieces fit together in each way so it just feels like nothing's happening, but, you know, the magic's all going on behind the scenes. And so I started iterating. And there were a lot of ideas of what freelancers need, what they don't need. So we did lots of interviews with freelancers on jobs to be done kind of methodologies. And then we put out a big survey. And then around March or April, I brought in a few people and said, hey, have a look at the prototype that, you know, I built while we were all in this hysterical COVID land of, you know, seeing this on the TV every day. I thought, well, I'm just not going to watch TV. I'm just going to put that away and work on my thing here. And one of the guys I'd worked with before on another project, his name's David Jakes. He's like, I'm in. He was the CFO of PayPal, their first CFO on that team. So,
oh, shout out.
Yeah. So he came into the company and said, hey, I'm in. So he was kind of like the second person who was involved. And after that, I asked some designers and some people I'd worked with before to get involved. And we worked basically on Fresh Air for almost a year. None of us took a paycheck or anything. And we just developed and developed and developed and got deals with some of the banking services providers in North America and in Europe and in the UK. And now we're moving into the APAC area. So yeah, a couple years, nonstop, 24/7, even on the weekends, of just, you know, plowing through it. I think that, though, it doesn't feel like work because I know it can help change people's lives. So it's something that I feel really impassioned by, and everyone on our team feels that too. It's kind of hard to explain that phenomenon when you feel that movement or that sense of feel really within the team that you don't get all the time. And I've worked with a lot of startups, and this is something that I think everyone realized, okay, we can make a huge impact here. And so we work tirelessly, but you know, it's fun. And we get to create things like this.
Yeah. And hey, it sounds like it's working. So you're seeing some fruits of your labor, yeah? Like with the work, like if you going a year on Fresh Air. So hopefully you're not just treading water now, hey?
No, we raised capital. We raised capital and built out the team. So. And the workload is more dispersed, and we have more expertise on the team now. And yeah, we're in revenue now too. We've generated some revenue for the company already. Yeah, it's exciting. We're going to be turning it on in different territories. And right now we're really testing certain ones just to get some data back to see how customers use the application. So it's really new. Main launch is in September. So. We're excited. I mean,
you heard it there, folks.
Yeah, go download the app and reserve your username, and then when the time comes, we'll let you in. When we're in your neck of the woods, wherever you are in the world.
How's it looking down south, down under, down here in Australia?
Yeah, we're
getting a bit of flow.
Yeah, we've got we're doing a deal with a banking partner in APAC, so. That will include Australia. Hopefully that'll be in Q1 of this coming year.
Nice.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Well, I'm a quad. I've got no hand dexterity, but anyway, they're crossed. But yeah, so when you're looking at, I get fascinated about this, right? When you're looking at raising capital and you look at like the multiple parties that are involved and, just, you know, trying to really balance that ship and trying to hit it when the time's right. So how does one in this tech space, because you said you've been involved in startups, you've seen it, you've lived it, you've breathed it, and you could see opportunity, but when is it right? And who are the sort of players that you're going out towards? And how do you access these people?
Oh, in order to raise investment.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there are a lot of, when you're first a startup, at the very beginning, there are a lot of angel investors out there. Sometimes you raise money from friends and family to get started. In our case, we wanted to build out as much as we could and get angel investors involved. So the first few investors were angels, and there are quite a few angel investor networks if you don't know an angel yourself. But when it comes to raising venture capital, a lot of times it's introductions that people can make, and also know, being very clear about your sector and make sure you don't contact people who don't invest in your sector or your market. Yeah, introductions, warm introductions, sometimes going to events. There are several there's several online communities that introduce founders to investors. And there are quite a few investor networks out there. And then oftentimes, if you make enough noise, VCs and angels or high net worths will contact you. So it's a matter of how much noise you've made, really, like in PR, if they read about you in Forbes or in other major publication, they'll sometimes reach out, which has been the case for us on quite a few occasions.
Nice. They're knocking on your
door. Usually you want to get to know them early. So when you do have an idea and you're not necessarily raising capital at that moment, but getting to know them and creating that relationship, you know, people do business with people. It's always about that people communication. So don't want to wait until you need the money to start that relationship with them. You want to get to know them, let them, you know, see you and be part of your network over time and touch base with them so that when you know you need to raise 10 million capital, that you know, it's like, okay, we could probably approach them because they've been following us. They've seen the traction. They're paying attention to us. That helps.
And if they're seeing the traction, so like they're hearing the noise, the PR, but do you put across like feasibility studies or they're just generally looking at your model and the direction of like, yeah, this is how we're going to look within this quarter or this half of the year, or this is what we're going to be between 3 to 5 years and the growth and the trajectory. So how does all that come across?
I think it's different for different types of investors and how they build their portfolios. So some funds will only invest at seed stage. Some will only invest at Series C or, you know, pre-IPO. And it really depends on their strategy more than anything. And it's about making that match at the inflection point within your company. So you know if you're at seed stage or if you're at Series A, it's going to be a different conversation than it is for a late stage company getting ready to go IPO or, you know, and so there are different funds for different phases in every startup, and then of course different verticals within various industries. You know, some you don't want to approach like a pharmaceutical, a VC that only invests in pharmaceuticals if you're artificial intelligence tech, you know, API or something, right? So there are different types of VCs who focus in very particular markets and they get to know that market very, very well. And then they strategize the same way a startup would in kind of the roadmap of how they build their funds out. And their portfolio.
And can you explain to the listeners and viewers just what it takes, like, because you bring a good point up there when you're talking about an IPO and what an IPO is, what you're doing before it, the level that you have to get to, and when you finally get to that stage, if you're going to cross it, because there's like where you do have companies like where they do go down that route or they don't, or if it's, or when to pull the trigger to go to that next stage, because the timing, you got to get the timing right too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really is timing and market factors of when you would want to IPO. Generally though, you want to be on your way to unicorn or even decacorn. Yeah, you want to be on your way to a unicorn, probably $500,000 to $1 billion company if you're going to IPO successfully. Although, you know, some companies IPO on smaller exchanges. There's so many different ways to do it that it would take, you know, a lot more in-depth conversation about this topic. But, you know, there have been historically so many different ways that companies have IPO'd. Some of them have IPO'd pre-launch, which in this market is insane. You wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's nuts.
So there are a lot of different strategies. And I think that topic probably requires somebody who's a lot more experienced at it than I am. But yeah, there, it really depends. You know, in our case, we are looking to IPO probably after a series C or D, and after quite a bit of work and expansion as well. But that's what we're considering ourselves in terms of our future for the company.
Huge goal. And I really hope it all works out. Like when you're looking at, especially the past 2 years, COVID and everything. But have you seen where, like, yes, it's COVID and the toll that it's took on the globe, the world, but has it sort of had its benefits when you're looking at tech and just where people want to reach out and how they want to harness technology and obviously more people working from home and what they can do?
Yeah, I think that, you know, COVID created kind of a little bubble, right, with valuations soaring towards the end of it, because I think investors held back during the scary time of 2020. And then all of a sudden they had all this money that they needed to invest. And so there's a lot of money in the market. There still is. And so tech companies kind of pumped up their valuations as a result of that. So I feel like there was like a little bit of a bubble. And now there's been a dip in the market just recently. So, you know, with the drop in tech, and there hasn't been a really strong tech crisis. You know, the 2008 thing was a little bit of a blip in technology. So tech has been going up the way in terms of investment, innovation in general, and the way we're iterating in society, you know, with technology. It's boom, 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 boom. So this year is going to be really interesting in terms of like the global market forces, the bellwether effect in the globe. So we just have to see what happens. But we probably are heading towards a small dip in technology in the future, like in the next year or so. And I think that means that the unit economics, the real numbers in terms of valuation, the truth, the kind of more transparent company who's really building the bricks in their tech and in their financial models, going to become more and more important for a while, because the market just went crazy after the COVID effect, really. So I see a future where you need to be really steadfast with your company and control that. That equation of unit economics and revenue building in your models. That would be my advice to any startup right now.
And that's great to hear. And where does one channel that information? Like if they want to go on the lookout and pretty much everything that you've covered there, like if they want to find this information, because if you're going to look for the hills and the valleys, where does one source this information?
Well, you know, the financial markets, the Financial Time, Market Watch, you know, the feeling in market that you'll read, you know, that everything's, the markets move like a bit like an ocean, right? You know, there's trends, there's waves, and there's, you know, trough. So I think it's just a matter of paying attention in the market that you're in and following the industry news that you're involved in, and obviously watching things globally. War in Ukraine kind of is a indicator, trends from the past, that generally what generally happens versus what could happen are two different things. But I think, it's mainly, you know, the war, the Ukraine war, Putin, the way Europe's reacting, the chip crises earlier on in the year that everybody's been warned about. So
I know I had to wait months for my, like, had a new car, ordered a new car, and that took months. Yeah. Even I even got the new Xbox that I was supposed to get for Christmas. That took a while to get in.
Yeah, so the chip crisis is an issue as well. It's slowing things down, and whenever you slow things down, there's blips in the market as well. So we have a lot of like combination effects going on, I think, and not just in technology, just in the world. A lot of quantity tightening up, you know, from governments, and you know, in the UK, I've read and listened to a lot of problems there recently. In Europe, that there'll probably be some sort of a knock-on effect, and it's the same a bit in the United States. So we'll have to see what this year looks like. So I just think people should, be aware, especially startups, really focus on revenue generating, and really focus on, if you're raising capital, getting enough in for a wee while to stay you off.
Yeah, cool. And what do you think of, like, when you know, if it's building, like, if it's having in-house, like, when you're building up your app or your platform, but if you're looking down the lines of blockchain, and if you're looking at other individuals that can sort of come in collectively and, you know, help build, and, you know, it's throwing certain algorithms that people think it might work and assist to your platform. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that collaborative platforms that are global are amazing, and I think there's opportunity for that, especially with WeDo. We're looking at opening up a marketplace for building, where people can actually build onto the platform and then sell those modules for people. So when you think about different types of tools that are bespoke to various industries, that, you know, technologists can build upon that, like through the application, through our SDK. So that's kind of exciting. And I don't know when we'll start that, probably sometime next year. But yeah.
That's awesome. So, okay, important, because I'm involved in, like, me being a quadriplegic, C5, C6 incomplete quad, and involved in the disability sector in different facets. So, and when it's got to do with accessibility, so how is accessibility going to roll into your app? And I know, and it's always tricky, because I've talked to individuals that are in this space, because then you're thinking of if it's physical impairments, if it's vision impaired, hearing impaired. So what's going on in the background there? What's building up?
Yeah, well, you probably noticed the disability icon on our website. For the app itself, we're working on doing a lot of voice activation for handicapped people who can't press buttons, or who have difficulty with moving their digits. And we also have accessibility for the blind, so audio features that they can click through when they hold their phone. And I think that there's a lot more innovation and technology that's gearing towards that space, especially, and it's extremely important. Inclusion is extremely important. Some of the best minds may not have, you know, a limb or a nose or a ear or a foot, or maybe blind, and the best voices and the best intuitive spirits out there. And I think, you know, society needs to make that more accessible across every application. And I think there's a big movement towards getting that in check.
That's good to hear. Had to bring that up. Wanted to see if that box was ticked, you know. Because, like you said, it's what you're doing there. It's being inclusive and trying to balance that out for everybody as much as you can, you know. But it's, and I'm loving this blockchain, because, you know, if it's got to do with accessibility features or whatever it may be, and then if it's like you could be like looking into, peering into whoever's building up something that's, you know, really gonna help the platform but help individuals, and if it's, you know, putting dollars and cents in their pocket, and then it's just gonna elevate the platform and just how everything works. That's That's great. So have you got, what's advice that you've got people, because there's a lot of individuals from all over the globe that are getting mixed up in startups with applications on different platforms. So, and whether this is if you got money, you don't have money, you're looking for money, or you just, what's the advice for starting up and just getting practical behind things, and you know, you got your dreams there, but trying to make it a reality. So
yeah, well,
where's that lead to?
Yeah, I think one of the main things for founders or people who want to pursue an idea is to really think about the idea and flesh it out in your mind, and then flesh it out on paper and see how practical it is, or see, you know, find out whether this is the idea that you feel completely convicted to pursue over a long period of time, because startups aren't something you just, you know, snap your fingers and they work, right? So you have to be very convicted that this is an idea that you want to solve. This is a problem you want to solve for people or for the animals or for, you know, whatever that is. And I think that's first and foremost, because you have to be prepared to say, I'm willing to give up at least 2 or 3 of my years of my life or more to really pursue this mission, right? This idea, when you're starting up in technology, especially. But that goes for just about any type of startup. It's not just not a smaller or medium sized business. It's like a more locally achievable. You can start up, you know, you can buy a bar or a restaurant and walk in and have the keys and get started over a period of a few months or several months, and then you're building your business and you're committing to that. But with startups, it's a little bit different. The way you attract other people is to have a really clear and concise vision of the startup and a plan to get there. And so I think really focusing on that is really the first and foremost of importance. After that, once it's a solid idea, attracting people to want to be involved, because you can't just do it on your own. It's very difficult to run a whole startup by yourself. I would focus on that.
That's awesome. So, social disruption. You got Forbes, CNN, I've seen that on the website. So they're noticing what's going on with WeDo, yeah?
Yeah, Forbes have published about us a couple times, and they've invited me to be a member of their technology council. So I have a column now in Forbes. That's just happened a few weeks ago. So really excited about that, to be able to share some insights with people about technology and about startups, and write about it, and hopefully help people who are interested in being entrepreneurs.
Congratulations, that's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I really appreciate your time, Indy, and I really hope that, you know, the hard work that yourself and the team that are put in, that it's not all just running on, you know, fresh air, that things are really gonna grow. And so when you're looking at the date of September, I really hope when that launches, like everything on the back end, and that a lot of people get behind it. So, you know, high tide raises all canoes, and it seems that yourself, that you put a lot of work in, and it just looking at it and what it sounds like, it sounds great. It looks great what I'm just saying on face value. So if people want to get in contact like with yourself, or if they just want to have questions, or if they want to just jump straight in into the app and want to sign up, and then it's getting ready and to rock and roll for September and the launch, how do they get a hold of you?
Okay, so to download the app, you can just go to the Apple Store or Android, you know, the Android store and download it. Just look up WeDoo. You'll see the logo like it's on the Wee Man here. And you can download it and reserve your username. And that will kick off a flow of information to you about what we're doing. And hopefully we can get more people involved. There's a lot of exciting stuff that the team have planned. To get a hold of me, I have social media. So at Indiana Greg is my socials on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and everywhere. And then the company have social media as well. So if you guys want to go check it out, it's usually WeDoo with an underscore and then HQ. So if you type in WeDoo HQ, you'll see the logo and the Wee Man. He appears on some of our social media quite often on all the usual suspects. So Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. I think that's most of them.
Awesome. Well, really appreciate the yarn, and like I said, I'll look forward to it. September, you heard it there, folks. Be prepared.
Thanks for having me here.
No worries. Cheers, Indy. See, folks. Solid yarn and interesting. And hope but nothing for the best for Indy and his software, WeDoo. And just helping a lot of freelancers and individuals around the globe. Hope but nothing for the best. And if you like the podcast, hit that subscribe or follow button. And we've also got a Patreon page. The link is within the description. So if you want to roll with Squad and become a patron, that'd be great. And if you want to get in contact with me, you can get me via Instagram at streetrollingcheetah or email, one word, streetrollingcheetah@gmail.com. And we've also got a Facebook page, Keep Rolling with Jake Briggs, so check it out. And want to thank our sponsors, Permobil Australia, greatest electric wheelchairs in the land. Wouldn't be sitting in anything else but these four wheels right here, and they've got great assistive tech also. So righto, see you on the next one.